on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show, 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
Good morning and welcome to The Gardening Show. I'm Ann Holliday along with Bob Harris. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
And as you heard, if you have a question for Bob, you can give us a call at 368-9372. That's 368-WESB. Or you can send us an email at garden@WESB.com. Or you can go to facebook.com/WESB1075. And there is a Facebook post right there with Bob's picture on it. And you can just leave us a question there. And I'll pass that on to Bob. So, Bob, we're talking about a couple of really cool things today. So,
yeah, I'm going to talk about the coffee plant.
Okay.
Because it's unusual, and it's one of the plants that's really changed the whole world. So it affects the whole world and has made some people filthy rich and has made people invent things possibly that normally wouldn't have been done. But the coffee plant, it has caffeine in it. It also has 800 other compounds in it that we know nothing about.
Wow.
Yeah. And most plants don't have that many compounds. Coffee is very, very unusual in that respect. But its main ingredient that we're worried
addicted
about.
Addicted to?
Yeah, addicted to, is caffeine. And it all started in Ethiopia, where coffee began. The story is, no one can prove it because it goes way, way back, where an Ethiopian goat herder saw that after his goats had chewed on the leaves of the coffee plant, they just did a lot of playing and jumping and running around. So he decided, well, geez, it gives them so much energy, and maybe I ought to try it too. So he did, and he told everybody about the results, and that's how coffee became such a famous and long-running drink.
Gosh, whether that's true or not, it's a cool story.
Yeah. So the caffeine in it is kind of funny because it's a natural insecticide. Now, where coffee comes from and originated, it's in the tropics in Ethiopia, and now it grows just about everywhere. But and the coffee plant can be attacked by over 1,000 different pests, insects, snails, slugs, birds, all different kinds of pests can attack it and harm it. But with the caffeine in it, those pests leave it alone. It's a plant with its own insecticide in it. And there are very, very few plants on earth that have caffeine in it. You know, cacao and kola nut. There's very few. There's only probably a half a dozen. It's kind of unusual. And so some people may say, well, how does it get pollinated then if it's a natural insecticide? Well, come to find out, the honeybees kind of enjoy. A lot of tests have been done with it by experts that are in the honeybee industry. And they find that the honeybees love caffeine.
See, another reason for me to love honeybees. We have something in common.
And they're the only insect that does. Let me go back a little bit. Some of the other insects, even a mosquito, really hates caffeine and stays away. So it makes it a little easier for people that are around a coffee plant. But some insects, like the slugs and snails, take one bite and they just shrivel right up. Other bugs take a bite, and of course, it kills them in different ways. The caffeine is just an amazing insecticide in that way. But the honeybee seems to really enjoy it, and a lot of tests by the Honeybee Association has watched, and they have put caffeine in different flowers and set the honeybees out, and the honeybees always seem to go back to the caffeine nectar more so than any of the other nectars. They just seem to enjoy that more. So it does get pollinated very easily. And So that's an amazing point too. But also, you know, we say it's a stimulant, and it's kind of like capsaicin that's in the hot peppers that makes us feel like our mouth is on fire, even though it's not on fire. You know, so the caffeine works in a similar way. We have a adenosine, I think it is, in the brain, a chemical that when it's released, it makes us calm down and want to rest. The caffeine blocks the neural sensors that allow that to happen. So it really isn't stimulating us. It's stopping us from feeling tired. So it's kind of neat that way. Why that happens with us, they really don't know, along with the 800 other compounds that are in coffee. They have yet to really study them and find out how they react. Let's see. In the coffee plant, though, too, the caffeine is moved around in the plant quite a bit. When it first starts growing, all the caffeine is concentrated in the new leaves, because that's where the insects and other animals may want to feed on. So it moves all the caffeine to that area. And caffeine takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of nitrogen from the plant to produce it. So it's kind of a weird thing, you know, why would a plant steal all the nitrogen it needs to grow to go for possibly a defense system? But it does move around. So it sends it all to the young leaves so the insects won't bother them. And as those leaves get older, they get tougher and less nutritious and less tasty for the insects. So it starts to move that caffeine. It doesn't have to reproduce more. It just moves it around. So it's kind of an ingenious process. It pulls it out of those newer leaves that have now gotten older, puts it into the other newer leaves. And now, at the same time, when it begins to flower, it sends some of that caffeine to the flower also to help, they're guessing, to help attract the bees. Mm-hmm. Because okay. The bees just seem to like it, just like us. And then eventually, it'll send it to the fruit of the plant. And also the fruit can make its own caffeine. So it gets a super boost of caffeine in the fruit. And that's kind of odd to me too, because most plants produce a fruit that's very edible. So the animals will eat it, carry it away, and deposit it somewhere else so it can carry on its genes. The coffee is real picky about where it grows. So it doesn't want to travel. So no one will bother the beans. So it does, the beans just drop right off the plant, and they can grow right there because they're near the mother plant and they're near the conditions she liked. So that's a big benefit. But also, along with being an insecticide, caffeine is always, is a great herbicide. It doesn't let plants grow. So how does the coffee bean itself grow? It has a few cells in each bean that are kind of special, and they call it that they're able to imbibe water. That means they're able to collect an extra amount of water. And they'll do that after they hit the ground. Those particular cells will collect a lot of water, which pushes the bean, the seed, away from the bean. So then it's able to grow because it's not harmed by this herbicide now. Yeah, it's kind of amazing.
Who knew coffee was such an interesting plant?
But no other plant can grow around it because of the caffeine. Stops germination from happening. But its own seed has a way of fighting against that by pushing away. And then, of course, then it can touch ground that isn't been wet by caffeine, and it can start to grow then. And once it starts to grow, then the caffeine can't bother it. So that's kind of a fascinating fact, too, about coffee and caffeine.
Just so interesting. And if you have a question for Bob,
about anything he's talked about so far today or anything else in your lawn and garden or critters, bugs, anything, just give us a call at 368-9372-368-WESB, or you can send an email to garden@WESB.com, or you can go to facebook.com/WESB1075 and ask your question there. Bob, back to you.
So a couple more interesting things about the coffee plant and the coffee bean is a trip to the coffee house is still different from visiting a tavern or any other place. It seems like caffeine kind of encourages talk and thinking, right to the point where in London there was a place called Edward Lloyd's, one of the first coffee houses in England. And some guys met there quite often and started talking, and with the caffeine in their system, it seemed to make their brains work a little bit more. And that's where they developed a company called Lloyd's of London, the biggest insurance company on earth. And the Bank of New York at the Merchants Coffee House in London started the stock exchange. It keeps going on and on and on. One place, Christie's and Sotheby's, one of the biggest auction houses in town, that in the world, I mean, not in town, in the world, began its career at a coffee shop also, because a couple guys got together and started talking, and they started selling some things out of the coffee house to make money to buy more coffee. And it finally became the biggest auction house in the world.
That is just so cool.
And coffee houses then started getting the term where they were called penny universities, because just for a few pennies, you could get a drink of coffee and sit around with a bunch of people that were thinking more than they normally would. Let's see, some of the Sir Isaac Newton frequented coffee houses. A lot of famous people, the Royal Society, which incidentally began life as the Oxford Coffee Club, began in a coffee house. Ben Franklin, when he was in London, he always frequented a coffee house called Procope. And several other big thinkers of that time, and they think that that may have spurred on the revolution in America because of some of the thinking and some of the talking they did in that particular coffee house. Gosh, it just keeps going on and on about them. And then
I think we might have a caller here, Bob. Let's check her out here. Good morning. Do you have a question for Bob?
Morning, Ann, Bob. Yeah, one thing, I enjoy the thing about the coffee trade, Bob. Excuse me. One thing you're forgetting, I had one. I bought it. It must have been only 6-7 inches tall. When I lost it, it was around 7 feet tall. One thing you're forgetting, though, my gosh, the fragrance from the blossoms.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you're right. They are very fragrant.
Oh, yeah. It's from a little thing up to 7 feet. I had beans and all that. Of course, I didn't grind anything. But that was really interesting. How do they decaffeinate it?
Oh, that... a lot of times through a process, and it takes a lot of chemicals to get the caffeine out, and pouring hot water over it to get the caffeine out.
Yeah, how I lost my tree finally is I have it outside and bring it into the garage and then into the basement. Well, this time I brought it directly into the basement, and the heat didn't make it.
Yeah. It is a neat houseplant, though, isn't it?
Oh, it definitely is, yes, yeah. I gave, I don't know how many away to the neighbors and so forth, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like you say, the blossom is really well-scented, a real pleasant scent, and it blooms
a
lot.
Fragrant. Yeah.
What does it smell like?
What's it smell like? I don't know, Bob. Was it ginger and all kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's just a real pleasant, almost like grandma's perfume to me.
Yeah.
All right.
If you get a hold of one, get one.
Yes.
Gosh, that's really interesting.
Yeah. Thanks for that call.
Yeah, it makes a nice looking plant, too.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Yeah. lot. Have a nice day now.
Oh, okay. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, cool.
Yeah, okay. I forgot about that part. It does make a great house plant. Like I say, blooms really well and even produces some berries, which kind of neat because you can pick them and produce your own coffee if you like. Also, in 1983, a guy called Howard Schultz installed the first espresso machine in Seattle at Starbucks Coffee in 1983. And he helped spark what would be called the coffee house renaissance in America. And now Starbucks has over 20,000 stores in 62 countries. Has maybe sparked some of the things, because all these things came out of that same area at the same time, was Microsoft and Amazon, Expedia, Real Networks, all those things. So a lot of people claim that it spurred on the information era or age in America and probably throughout the world because of the coffee bean.
I believe that. We're going to come back and talk about that some more. But first, we have to hear from our friends from Worth W. Smith. And we will be back in about 30 seconds.
If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. Here's something you didn't expect. Get a 5-gallon pail of liquid laundry soap for just $34.99. That's a real bargain. See Worth Smith for everything from Toro mowers and treated and untreated lumber to gardening tools, soils, play sand, patio slabs, smoker pellets, and you get the picture. If you need it, you'll find it. Even 5-gallon pails of laundry soap at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware, celebrating their 90th year in business.
Welcome back to The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris. And if you have a question for Bob, give us a call at 368-9372. That's 368-WESB. Or you can go to facebook.com/WESB1075. You'll see a picture of Bob there. Just ask your question right there in that post. Or you can send us an email at garden@WESB.com. And we've been talking about coffee and caffeine and honeybees today.
Yeah.
And if there's no other reason for you to save honeybees if you haven't helped do it yet and you need a reason more than what we've given you, it's the caffeine.
Yeah, I'm afraid so, yeah.
So save the honeybees.
And, you know, they are working on coffee plants that can withstand the frost. You know, so far, naturally, where it comes from, Ethiopia, and has been taken all over the world, a lot of it grown in South America now because they have the same rainforest conditions there. But there has been a lot of work done on making it a little bit frost-free so it can be, its land can be expanded so it can be grown in other places and probably have a little different taste too. With the coffee too, and a lot of people think it's connected, but companies like Google and Apple and Facebook now have full-scale coffee houses in their offices. So the employees and all of them, the employees get it free of charge. And possibly it's because the companies know that it does spur on conversation and higher thinking. So coffee has really changed the world in a way. So it's one of my most important plants.
So if back to this guy who called about having the coffee plant, is it easy to grow your own coffee plant?
It is indeed, yeah. It is, yeah. Once one of those beans on the plant gets ripe, or you can buy little coffee plants. But you can start it from a bean from somebody that has a coffee plant. And, of course, it's going to take care of itself. You just have to put it down in the soil like a half an inch or an inch. It will embed itself with water, those few cells, like I told you. Push that seed away from the bean so it gets away from the caffeine so it can germinate. It hasn't germinated yet. It's just pushed itself away. Then it'll germinate and start to grow. And And it does it quite quickly, too. But you got to make sure it's a ripe bean first.
So how much, like, if you had your own coffee plant, like a normal size house plant, I don't know what normal size is, but anyway, how much coffee could you make from it?
Oh, quite a bit. I can remember at Graham's we used to have quite a few coffee plants growing around the greenhouse. And it may have been to help keep the bug population down.
Okay.
We really don't know. That's one of those things that it's kind of lost information, but a lot of greenhouses did grow coffee plants, and that's kind of been forgotten why. But some of those were probably 4 or 5 foot tall, and they would produce hundreds of berries. So you could make lots of coffee from it.
So somebody around here could open a coffee shop and grow their own coffee.
Indoors, yeah.
Wow.
Now, of course, the rest of the process is pretty difficult too, you know. But still, some of the favorite ways of producing coffee is sun-dried. There are other ways, you know, and some companies do dry the beans by seed and then start to crush them. But still, the best way is to sun-dry it. It takes a lot of work because you got to keep moving them around and got to have the right weather to dry them properly. And then when they grind them, it's important whether it's a fine ground or a coarse ground because it's a whole different taste with those. Now, coffee aficionados, you know, the the gourmets of coffee, like it, the finer the ground grind, the better they like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is just so fascinating to me. I love this whole thing. And I have to tell you, I didn't realize there was a difference. I mean, I knew that there were different grinds and grounds and all of that. But it was a few years ago, the Chamber of Commerce was doing a cash mob Saturday where a bunch of people would just go to different stores and just spend $20 at the store. And one week it was Worth W. Smith.
Oh.
and they had a little tabletop coffee grinder thing.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what the heck? I'm going to try this.
Yeah.
And so I ground some coffee beans and I would try the different things. And the finer they were, the more the flavor came out.
Yeah. Some people, you know, when I was a kid, that was real popular. Every grocery store had a coffee grinder in it. So you could grind your own coffee beans to your liking.
Yeah.
You know, and some people like it coarse, some people like it fine, and some people in between. And you could also buy the different coffees. There's Arabica and Robusta. You know, now there's a few more varieties out there. They are, since coffee is so important to the world economically, that there's been invented, I guess you would call, new varieties with different tastes. But still the Arabica and Robusta is still probably the most popular by far.
Two of my favorite parts about going grocery shopping with my grandma were, number one, we would pass the grapes, and she would say, here, take a grape.
Yeah.
The second was her grinding the 8 o'clock coffee at the store. That was the best smell in the world.
It is. Yeah, we're attracted to the smell even. And grocery stores back when I was a kid, you know, in the 60s, it was real popular that the first guy in the store would grind a pound of coffee beans and then just throw it all over the floor to get that scent going all the way through the floor, because right away it does something to our brain that makes us hungry. So we buy more groceries that way. And I can always remember that, you know, when I was a little tiny kid, once in a while we'd get to go to the store with my dad, and he'd allow us to, you know, who wants to grind the coffee and scatter it up and down the aisles, and then take a broom and then push it all around. Make the whole store smell great.
Oh, that's really neat. That would be a fun part about working in a store. But yeah, that was just so neat. It was always 8 o'clock coffee.
Yeah,
and you can still grind it at Tops. I'm not sure about Walmart, but
I've never seen it at Walmart.
But at Tops, you can
They're
still
really missing the boat there.
Yeah, you can still grind your 8 o'clock coffee at Tops.
Yeah.
So
or if you go into a coffee house, the first thing you smell is the coffee.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Has Gosh.
An effect on you.
It does.
Not only the taste, but the smell.
And, Bob, what You got this information, some of this information, yeah, from this book that you have with you. What's the book?
Oh, okay, yeah. This is called The Triumph of Seeds. It's by Thor Hansen. And it's about a lot of different seeds, but one that really tickled me the most was the coffee bean.
Well, I saw the acorn on there and a couple other that look familiar. So
yeah, there's a lot of seeds that have affected man and civilization in very, very important ways, like the coffee.
So I'm not just into fiction. I like all this nonfiction stuff, too. Things that teach me, books that teach me things, I really
You know, it can be interesting, too. A lot of people like to buy a book for stories or intrigue or so on. I kind of prefer books that tell a true story of about plants.
Yeah.
And so I have a collection of these books, and this is just a great one. There's several other books out there, too, seeds and how they've affected seeds and plants, how they've affected civilizations and the movement of the world, and how plants have traveled the whole world because of their importance, how they've made people filthy rich and countries rich, and how they've made people very poor, too, by making small mistakes.
The backstory of all this stuff is just so interesting. Yeah, people need to read to find out about all of this kind of stuff. You can probably find all kinds of books about seeds and gardening and anything we took, coffee, at On the Side Books. And I'm sure Heather will help you.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Heather will help. Yeah.
And so we do still have a couple minutes left if there's anything else you wanted to mention.
Yeah, we're getting in that time of year, which is my favorite time to plant. A lot of people think, well, you got to do all your planting, you know, in late May, early June, and then it's all over. For a lot of us who have been gardening for a long time, that's a great time, but a better time for me is going into the fall. Plants are starting to slow down, so their requirements are less and less. So when I do plant a new plant, I don't have to worry about watering it constantly and caring for it and fertilizing it, because the plant is naturally slowing down and just preparing to ride out the winter. So it can be much, much easier on the gardener to plant in the fall. And a lot of weeds don't tend to grow when we turn over the soil in the fall. Most of the weeds occur in, we have the spring weeds, and then we have the summer weeds. There's very, very few weeds that want to grow and sprout in the fall, because they also know that it's winter's coming, and there's no sense in starting to grow now. So, and of course, watering, too, you know, watering needs. We get good dews. We get enough rains to support a new plant, so you're not married to the garden hose, I like to say, so you can enjoy life and still know that plant's going to be okay.
Okay.
And so interesting thing about plants, too, many of them, the tree's a good example. A lot of people think when the maple tree loses all its leaves, it's dormant, and that's what we've always said, that it's dormant. The roots continue to grow, and they will grow as long as the soil isn't frozen, and which happens a lot here anymore. And that's probably the most important part of any plant, is the roots. Even though we never see it, we don't never think about them, it is the most important part of the plant. And they will continue to grow, searching for new water sources, getting ready for spring. They'll store a lot of the foods in the roots. They can expand and grow to gather more food and more water, so that when spring arrives, they can get off to a real good start. Because in the plant world, the one that gets off to the best start is the winner. You know? So you can rest assured that even though all the leaves are off or the frost has killed your pretty perennial back to the ground, the roots are still growing.
Okay. All right. Something to remember. And thanks for listening to The Gardening Show. And if you have a question during the week and you don't think you can remember it till Saturday, You can send it to us on Facebook or garden at WESB.com, or you can always just give me a call at 368-9372. Thanks for listening.
Tune in next Saturday for more tips from Master Gardener Bob Harris on 1490 WESB Bradford.
The Gardening Show with Bob Harris on WESB.
We have to incorporate in our vegetable garden some petunias, some marigolds, all those little flowering plants to attract pollinators. Without the pollinators, we can be pretty sad that here we planted a cucumber. There's no cucumbers. That's probably because there's not as many bees as there used to be.
Watch on Facebook Live
or listen and call in.
The Gardening Show.
Saturday mornings at 8:30
on B107.5.
I'm coming home.